And then the flip side of that, you know, this is the risk of the vaginal birth. And then we have to talk about the risk of the C-section too, you know, what? Which I think a lot of people don't think about. A lot of people hear the risks of the vaginal birth and then they don't then get the risks of the C-section.
Right. And that's, you know, the risk of surgery in general. And then also there's other factors, like if you're going to have more kids, you know,
so absolutely.
Hi, I'm Rachel Manns, owner of The Natural Birth Site and this podcast, The Natural Birth Talk. Here, you'll learn all about different natural aspects of birth, pregnancy, and postpartum. Remember, none of this information should take the place of a care provider and is not medical advice. Birth is not a medical emergency. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. Today, I am here with Dr. Berlin of the Informed Pregnancy Podcast, and we are going to talk all about VBACs. But before we get started, I want to let him introduce himself.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Rachel.
Yeah.
I'm Elliot Berlin. I'm a chiropractor and massage therapist in Los Angeles, California. I smushed those two together to make the peanut butter and chocolate of holistic healthcare, chiropractic. And our population that we work with is primarily pre and postnatal. Mm-hmm. And my wife is a psychologist, and so together we do mind-body work. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. And it's just been a real educational journey. I started in medicine. I was working in ambulances and emergency rooms, and I loved medicine more than anything. I still respect it a lot, but I wanted to be on the more holistic side of things. And
yeah.
My journey in childbirth, once I started working with pregnancy and postpartum, was extremely eye-opening in terms of, you know, the balance between what we can do naturally and these modern medical innovations. So I started learning a lot, and I put it all together into media, informed pregnancy, so that, like you, people can have information on which they could make informed choices.
Yeah, which is the key, right? Like, we're not necessarily here to tell people what to do or how to do it, but to make sure they have the information to make the best choice for themselves, which is so important.
Indeed, yeah.
And you have something new releasing, or that just came out, right? The streaming?
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of years ago, and this is kind of gets into today's topic, I made a couple of documentaries, one on vaginal breech birth called Heads Up, and one on vaginal birth after cesarean called Trial of Labor. And they were hard to make as a non-filmmaker, and I'm really proud of them, my two little babies. And once they came out, they had this huge flare-up of activity and screenings and premieres and you know, action, impact. That's what I was going for. And then after a little while, you know, 6 months, I realized the only thing I know less about making a film is what to do once you have a great film. So I started getting these stabbing emails where people would say, hey, I saw Trial of Labor and it was really impactful for me. I wish I had seen it before I had my baby. And I'm like, no, I made it so you could see it before you had your baby.
Yeah.
And it really motivated me to kind of reach out to other filmmakers, and because there's some great iconic films in this space. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you keep, you know, the accessibility alive and awareness alive so people can get this kind of information in a timely manner? And generally, the answer was, we don't, which we're the same struggle that you're having. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I had this idea. Let's put them all together in this easy to access space, you know, on Android, on Apple, on Roku, on the internet, and make them very affordable and accessible, and give them the stage for the impact that they could have, their potential. And so we did that, and it's called Informed Pregnancy Plus. And right now we have about 15 documentaries streaming on there, and a bunch of web series, and a whole mind body section with meditations and yoga and pre and postnatal exercise workshops. Like, my wife is a psychologist. She has a workshop called The Afterbirth Plan, how to still like your partner after you have a baby together. And
big deal.
Yeah, most people don't think about it till afterwards, but now for $6, you can think about it anytime you want to. And so anybody can also try it for free, get a free trial, see if you like it. And if you hate it, don't ever come back. That's fine too. At least we tried.
I think that's so awesome. And like you said, that segues perfectly into what we're going to talk about, which is VBACs today. So it's been a little while since we've talked about VBACs on on the podcast. So what, not that your opinion necessarily matters for everybody out there, because everybody has to make their own opinion, but what is your thoughts or what is your opinion on VBACs, vaginal birth after cesarean?
It's the same as my opinion on all birth, which is that we have a lot of different options today. And mm-hmm. the person who's going to bring the baby from inside them out into the world is the one who ultimately should have the most say, really all the say. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can do that is by having all this information. Because when it comes to, you know, risk, you know, uh-huh. the real question is this a risk worth taking? Mm-hmm. And the answer is something only the person going to be taking the risk for the benefit can decide. And mm-hmm. so risk is very subjective. If I tell one person there's a 0.5% chance that your scar will separate and might lead to complications, and 99.5% chance that won't happen, mm-hmm. One person will say, oh, great. This is probably going to go great. I want to do this. It's worth it mm-hmm. to me. For the importance of the vaginal birth is worth it to me. Another person might say, well, that sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. And also even how you present it, right? Mm-hmm. If that is the risk, because in the first, in the surgical birth, there's a scar in the uterus that may or may not hold up to the test of labor next mm-hmm. time around. And the risk is, let's say, 0.5% that scar will separate and create problems. Even how I present it, I could say 0.5%, which to most people sounds like a very small number, but I could mm-hmm. also say 1 in 200, mm-hmm. which is the same exact statistic, but all of a sudden it sounds a lot scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the flip side of that, you know, this is the risk of the vaginal birth. And then we have to talk about the risk of the C-section too. You know, which I think a lot of people don't think about. A lot of people hear the risks of the vaginal birth, and then they don't then get the risks of the C-section.
Right. And that's, you know, the risk of surgery in general. And then also there's other factors, like if you're going to have more kids, you know.
Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
Now you're going to have, let's say, at least 2 cesareans under your belt. If you have a third kid, now you have to choose a third cesarean or a vaginal birth after 2 C-sections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, risk of surgery. I don't know why this year I've been seeing a lot of them. Infection, mm-hmm. hematomas, you know, even the risk of a healthy pregnancy the next time around. The mm-hmm. uterus changes. And with that uterine change comes some potential for abnormal attachment of the placenta to the uterine wall.
Yep.
And that can lead to even more serious complications. So there's risk on both sides. There's risk no matter what. And we take risks every day. I get into the car to go get milk.
Uh-huh.
Well, at least before Instacart. And and I'm like, I need the milk. So I'm going to take the risk that this 18-wheeler might crash into me, you know. Uh-huh. We do those risks every day. So when it comes to VBAC, the question is the whatever risk is involved in one choice worth for you taking that risk for some kind of benefit, or are the risks involved in the other choice the ones you would prefer to do? There's no risk-free option. So, right. You know, when it comes to VBAC, I think that forever there was this idea, once a C-section, always a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are surprised to learn that comes from an article in 1916 by Edwin Cragen. In Conservatism in Obstetrics, what he was trying to say was, now that we can do C-sections and both the mother and the baby live, because that wasn't always a given.
Right.
You know, we should be careful not overdo them just because we can, because that has consequences. And one of those consequences might be that if she has a C-section this time, she'll always have to have a C-section. He was trying to prevent too many cesarean births. And then he's probably rolling and rolling in his grave, because that has been used as the mantra to create so many additional cesarean births after the primary C-section.
Yeah.
So
it was taken totally out of context.
100%. And also, things have changed a lot since 1916.
Over 100 years ago.
I mean, how has medicine evolved at all since 1916? Yes, it has. How we do incisions, how we stitch, how we repair, how we treat infection, prevent infection. And so it's just a whole different world from then. And, you know, unfortunately, the decisions are sometimes made and don't really take into account the person who's giving birth or the baby as the primary issue. So, you know, for a little while, insurance companies were pushing people to have C-sections, vaginal birth. You know, they wanted people to have vaginal birth because cesarean was expensive.
Right.
And the insurance companies don't want to pay for them. So like, no, we're not going to do another surgery unless you try at least to have a vaginal birth. And then it was going well. The numbers were climbing in terms of VBAC. And then all of a sudden, in the 90s, uteruses started popping open. The scars started separating. And insurance companies got sued hardcore because they pushed women into having vaginal birth. That didn't end well. And so they took a big 180. They're like, okay, we're not doing vaginal birth after C-section anymore. We're only doing repeat cesarean. And they didn't even look into why. Why were all of a sudden uteruses starting to struggle under the heat of labor? And then later realized it was how we were inducing people.
Exactly.
And so, you know, the numbers really took a plummet. And ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, came up with these guidelines for obstetricians, gynecologists, and birth facilities saying that, you know, you should only do a VBAC, you should only offer a VBAC in a facility where the physician is readily available. But those are not well-defined statements, you know?
Right.
What is a facility? What kind of physician? And what is readily available? And without clear definitions, in today's day and age, medical practitioners and facilities have to define tightly so that they protect themselves. And so under that guideline, they self-determine that it has to be, you know, in a hospital where you have a team ready to go for surgery within 30 minutes. And a lot of hospitals can't do that. They're not able to accommodate that. So already VBAC became inaccessible to large swaths of the country. And then they changed one word that made it even worse. In a guideline update, they changed readily available to immediately available. And if readily was 30 minutes, immediately must be even sooner. So that was only attempt a VBAC essentially if you have a surgeon and an anesthesiologist in the facility during the entire labor, which most hospitals in the United States can't sustain. You know, big cities, perhaps teaching hospitals with residents, maybe. But then VBAC became even less accessible. And so what would I choose for myself? I don't know. But what I would want to know is what are the pros and cons factually and statistically, and what other factors are important to me. And to make a choice and be supported in my choice. The idea that there are bans on VBAC throughout the country is mind-boggling in America, since VBAC is the absence of a procedure.
Right.
Literally saying, I would like to have my baby with no procedure.
Without surgery.
Exactly. And then we ban that. We're like, no, you can't have it without surgery. You must have surgery. That's very un-American. Yeah. And it's not putting a lot of trust into the hands of the people who are pregnant, giving birth, and raising those children.
Right. Well, and one of the biggest things, you know, you're talking about that, you know, there's risks of both sides and you have to decide the risks and the benefits. And that is so important. And one of the things I teach in my online At Your Own Pace natural birth class is the mind-body connection and how important it is to trust your instincts. Because, you know, whether they're God-given or nature-given, however the audience is thinking about them, you have those instincts and you need to be able to just kind of sit quietly and use that to kind of decide what's going to be best for you, because there are pros and cons to both sides and there's not a clearly obvious choice one way or the other. I know if it were me, I would pick VBAC, but that doesn't mean that somebody else has to pick that or that they're crazy for picking a repeat cesarean. And it just really comes down to just having to trust that instinct that we all have. I think that's so important. And then, like you're saying, the medical community, you know, in a lot of hospitals is trying to take that choice away from us or has banned it and has taken it away from us. And that is just crazy to think that someone who's not the person going through surgery is the one deciding if the person's going to go through surgery or not. It's crazy.
There's two interesting things. One is I have a patient right now who I saw a couple of years ago, and she had a breech baby. Mm-hmm. And she tried everything under the sun to try to get that baby to turn. Mm-hmm. And the baby wouldn't turn, and she ended up having a cesarean birth. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen her since then. And now she's back 2 years later, pregnant again. Mm-hmm. Baby's head down. And great. I'm like, oh, that's great. She's like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm going to have another C-section. I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I had a really good experience with my cesarean birth. I loved it. And like, it's what I know now. And it was pretty easy. My recovery was a lot better than I thought it would be. And so I want to have another. Great. I support that 1,000%. That's It surprised me a little based on how much she wanted to have a vaginal birth the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm behind her 1,000,000%. And then the other thing is, I think in my zoned out view, if I could zoom out a little bit and look at the big picture, what I think is that for the most part, healthy people have two very safe choices.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a repeat cesarean, or you can have a vaginal birth after cesarean. I look at them as both very, very healthy choices, very safe choices. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes the pressure that someone feels when making this choice is like, oh my God, which is the right one and the wrong one? Which mm-hmm. one am I going to live or die? It's not like that. There are pros and cons mm-hmm. to both, and it's important to understand them so you can make the choice that mm-hmm. you'll be most satisfied with afterwards. But the good news is cesarean has become very safe and very predictable. Yeah. And VBAC, for the most part, according to, there was this huge National Institute of Health symposium on VBAC, and mm-hmm. they really vetted carefully all the participants to make sure there were no conflicting agendas. And they all came in and reported. And after the 3-day symposium, the conclusion was VBAC is pretty darn safe compared to other obstetric risks that we take all the time, and that it should be more accessible. And that's when ACOG started to change the guidelines a little bit to give providers a little help with the liability, meaning not going against the recommendations and the community norms. And in my area, VBAC has become a bit more accessible, but really just a little movement on the needle, nothing huge. And when you move just 10, 15 miles out of Los Angeles is no longer accessible again. So,
and that's where I am too. So I live in the greater St. Louis, Missouri area, but I actually live on the Illinois side. And if I go across the river to Missouri, there are VBAC doctors. There's so many options, and all of the hospitals really support VBAC. But then over here on my side where I actually live, it's a lot harder to find a doctor who is going to truly support a VBAC. You know, there are a couple that are like, yeah, I support it, but under XYZ circumstance only,
right?
Which, in my opinion, is not truly supportive.
It's tolerant at best.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more tolerant over here, whereas if we go just across the river, just 20 miles away, it's truly supported by several doctors over there. So it's crazy how just that 20 miles.
Border. Yeah. But if you weren't at the border, then you'd have to go hours to find support.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that there's a hospital just about, I don't know, 40 minutes north of me that does not do VBACs. And it's just crazy, crazy to me to think that just that, 40 minutes of distance or an hour of distance makes such a difference.
And that gets dangerous. Like if you're not with a provider who you feel is on the same page and really understands what you want and really wants you to have that, then in the heat of the moment, when they're starting to suggest interventions or a repeat cesarean, you're questioning, why are you saying that? Is that because of your agenda or because I really need it? And that's not a safe situation. That scenario can end poorly because there's a lack of trust.
Yep.
And, I have patients that have gone to the hospital because they can't get, for insurance reasons, they can't get access to a practitioner who's VBAC supportive.
Yeah.
And so they'll just labor at home as long as they can, kind of get into the hospital with a baby almost coming out of them and refuse to have surgery. And again, in America, that's sort of your prerogative. You do put them in a pickle, but it's not a very, it's not a very, that I think is unsafe compared to the other thing, the two basic options. I think it would be a lot safer for her and her providers if they would just say, okay, look, we don't love VBAC, but we know it's what you want and we're going to make it happen. I've had a patient do that with breech, also walk into a hospital with a breech baby coming out of her, and there were two doctors there, and neither one of them had ever seen a breech birth before. Who were coming in, it was a shift change, and two that were leaving, one was an old timer who had done a bunch of breech and stuck around, and it was a quick, smooth, easy breech birth. But again, you're pushing providers out of their training zone and out of their right. comfort zone. And that's where it starts to get dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, walking in, you know, last minute with a VBAC is, you know, I just want to say it's very different than walking in last minute with a breech birth, because there's a lot more risk with a breech birth and a care provider who is not properly trained versus, right. you know, walking in with a VBAC, you know, baby's head down. That's still just like, you know, kind of a straightforward vaginal birth in that
case.
It's
a birth.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is. It's tough that our providers are putting moms in those situations and in those circumstances, and moms are left feeling like they don't have another choice. And like you said, that is more dangerous than just offering them the choice in the first place.
Yeah, and forcing them to go against that inner voice that you talked about, that innate wisdom mm-hmm. that you're born with. I mean, if you ever question that wisdom, I think it's amazing to go online and watch animals give birth in nature.
Yeah.
And there's this one elephant birth video I keep coming back to. It's called Risky Business, R-I-S-K-I, because they named the elephant Risky.
Oh.
It's in Bali on a elephant sanctuary, and they see her giving birth, so they go to film it, and she mm-hmm. labors all by herself. She did not have the luxury of watching documentaries, listening to a podcast, taking an online course. She has nobody around her, not her partner, not a doula, not a labor and delivery nurse, midwife, doctor, nobody. Mm-hmm. She labors with confidence. You can tell mm-hmm. on an animal's face when they feel fearful or when they feel in control, and she has confidence. It's fairly quiet. It's intense, but mm-hmm. but controlled. And she does this like interesting dance and to mm-hmm. help wiggle the baby down, and she squats, and this 240-pound baby just comes crashing out of her with probably gallons of amniotic fluid. And then the crazy, so she did that all by herself, and mm-hmm. you can almost see her smiling, like she's proud of herself.
Yeah.
She turns around and she starts doing all the neonatal care with her little trunk. She's inspecting the baby. In this case, the baby happens to not be breathing. Now she mm-hmm. starts to get a little worried and starts to make noise.
Uh-huh.
And she tries several remedies. First, she kind of gently kicks the baby, like mm-hmm. would kind of smack them in the bum a little bit or tickle their foot. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. And eventually she wraps her trunk around the baby's tiny little newborn trunk, mm-hmm. lifts the head up and gives a little yank. And then the baby starts breathing.
Yeah. It's and so instinctual.
Yeah. How does this elephant know how to give birth? How does she know that she has yeah. to do neonatal care? How does she know that the baby is not breathing, or that not breathing is a problem, and how mm-hmm. to remedy and fix it? It's all hardwired. It's in your mm-hmm. inborn innate intelligence, which is much smarter than our educated intelligence. We have yes. learned a lot, but we have not learned nearly as much as the body knows.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
To the extent that we can support the body and its ability to communicate with itself and to remedy itself and just sort of back off and leave things alone, mm-hmm. unless there's, you know, a strong sign that, we need to intervene here because something's off,
mm-hmm.
you know, then what would probably happen is the primary cesarean rate would drop tremendously.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't really even have such a debate on VBAC.
True. Yeah, that is so true. You know, and of course, looking for signs of cesarean, that is very vague. Or like, you know, looking for some signs that a cesarean might be needed. That's vague and needing to define what that means a little bit better. But, you know, that's not our job. But
right,
it is. It's so crazy to just watch, you know, animals or even humans who have grown up around birth. You know, especially in a lot of those traditional cultures where it's kind of like a village affair, you know, all of the women, even the, you know, older female children are there and present, you know, they birth with so much more confidence and so much more ease than someone who's being watched in a hospital.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all hormonal.
Yeah.
And it's specifically oxytocin. And oxytocin mm-hmm. is a hormone that does not generally respond well to fanfare, to yeah. spotlight, and to, you know, observation.
Right. It likes privacy and intimacy and, you know, that quiet, peaceful state.
Yeah. And so when you put somebody under those spotlights, have random people coming and going, mm-hmm. put on probably the absolutely least empowering outfit ever made in uh-huh. humankind, And then just hook up IVs and straps and monitors and belts. You know, it's the same hormone for conception. If you can you imagine conceiving in that environment? Most people can't. So, you know, we're asking the body to feel very relaxed and open and intimate, and make that oxytocin in that setting is an uphill battle from the minute you walk in there.
Yeah. And then if you're going in as a VBAC and you're feeling pressured and you're not feeling supported and you're feeling like, you know, they really want you to have a C-section, even if your instincts are telling you that a vaginal birth is the right choice for you, it's going to be really hard to trust that innate wisdom and ignore the medical jargon that's coming at you. Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here, and today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, How Fun Is That?, Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. Visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show.
You just reminded me, we shot a birth for another film that we haven't made yet. And her first baby was Breach, and she had a cesarean birth. In her case, the opposite of my other patient, she hated the cesarean. She's very active. She's a runner. She's extremely in tune with her body, and she felt the complete and total destruction of homeostasis. And, you know, it just never really recovered from it. Her second baby was Breach again. It's not super common. And she, decided that time I might get together with one of the doctors in town who does Breach birth. And he also does VBAC. And he's like, okay, we can do a vaginal Breach birth, after cesarean. And, you know, again, explaining the risks and the benefits and letting her choose which one she wanted to do. And so that's what she chose to do. And he also does out of hospital birth. So this was going to be a non-hospital birthing center vaginal Breach after cesarean.
That's awesome.
Fortunately or not, we got the baby to turn. So
well, still, I mean, that's still great because I am totally supportive of vaginal Breach birth, but if you can get baby to turn head down, I mean,
definitely
that's
a better scenario. 100% So, but she still loved, she was only with this team because they were the only ones who would do it. She still loved this team of providers, and so she's like, I want to do an out of hospital VBAC. And, the doctor that does that was traveling, and in the last 2 weeks before she gave birth, she went to her hospital doctor for the monitoring and whatnot. And that hospital doctor put so much fear into her mind about VBAC in general, out of hospital VBAC in particular. And so her doctor did come back. She was actually in early labor already when he got back into town. He literally went from the airport to the birth center.
And, that's a good doctor.
came to support her. Oh, he's the best. And, there's a moment at the end when she's pushing, and because the baby, well, she's not pushing it. She's about to push. And because the baby had dropped lower down, when they go to listen for the heartbeat, they don't hear it.
Which is so normal.
Super normal, super typical. Nobody was panicked, but she panicked for a minute. And she's like, oh, my God, he was right.
Yeah, just thinking back to that negativity that that one doctor put in her mind.
All that fear was in there, and she had to labor past that the entire time. And so, you know, it's just, it's the same thing like when I have patients come in and they're 33 weeks and their doctor's like, hey, look, this baby's measuring very big. You know, it could have a problem coming out of you. We should already start thinking about induction for 39 weeks. And I'm like, what are you talking? Like, go whisper into the elephant. She's got 240-pound baby on average. If you whisper into her big floppy ear that this one's measuring around 250, 255, do you think it makes a difference into how she labors the baby down? It does not. And that's the difference between us and those elephants. One of the big differences, we have a neocortex. We have a new part of the brain that can rationalize and analyze. Mm-hmm. And when you give it data, it almost never does wonderful things with that data in terms of confidence, you know, and in terms of positivity and empowerment. So unless the baby's gigantic and there's a real problem or there's a huge disproportion, I'm always telling my patients, please ask your doctor to not tell you unless you really want to know
what we
think the baby weighs, even what we think is generally off by quite a bit.
Yeah. And we rarely grow babies we can't birth. Like, it is so, so rare. And so whether that's a primary birth or a VBAC or, you know, whatever, we rarely grow babies we can't birth. And like you said, so much of our questioning, so much of our concerns in birth do not come from our instincts, but they come from our care provider. And so if you are someone who's out there trying to have a VBAC or really hoping for a VBAC, it is so important to have a care provider who truly supports that versus if you can find one, you know, versus someone who is tolerant of it or someone who's pushing you the other way because of the way our brain works and because of the way that just that one little bit of negativity can really come back to almost haunt us in labor. And that's not helpful for anybody.
Absolutely.
We're getting close to the end. Is there anything you want to say about how chiropractic care can help with VBACs or any other tips or anything else that you're thinking that you really want to add?
Yeah. So you said that we rarely grow a baby you can't birth. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen very small hipped people give birth to very large babies. We have an episode of our podcast called Labor Day Surprise, where she had an 11-pound baby.
Wow.
Vaginally unmedicated and didn't even tear.
I have a client who has a very similar story. So it happens.
You can do it. So what happens is frequently we're looking at just structure and not function. Who cares if the baby's head is bigger than the pelvic opening? The baby's head functionally is designed to be able to smush and mold through a smaller opening, and the pelvis is designed to be able to expand and allow something larger to pass through. So in all the forms of pelvimetry where they're looking for cephalopelvic disproportion, this baby could not possibly fit through that pelvis. No, because you're not looking at function at all. Mm-hmm. And there's no real way to measure that function until you're in labor and you try.
Right.
And where chiropractic comes in, the body work that we do, our whole goal is to try to make the musculoskeletal pelvis more functional. It should be able to expand and contract and accommodate, if not facilitate, the movements of the baby during labor. And when things are stiff, tight, and rigid, then you're asking for trouble. So that's the pelvic paradox, where sometimes tiny women give birth to very large babies smoothly. Sometimes women who have been told their whole life, wow, those hips are going to be great for birth, have a 6-pound baby get stuck on the way out. It's a lot of it has to do with function, musculoskeletal, but also nervous system. And if you can work on those two things leading up to birth, calming the nervous system, feeling confident, safe, and cared for and empowered, and getting your muscles and bones to not be too stiff, tight, and rigid, you've got a much better scenario than if you're going to labor terrified and also physically all locked up.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, you know, we live in a culture where we sit a lot and we're stagnant, and the exercise we do get may not necessarily be accommodating for a relaxed pelvis. And that's just, you know, part of, you know, facts of life for how we live now. And the you know, in my opinion, one of the best ways to combat that is to go see a chiropractor. And by doing so, you're, whether you're a VBAC or not, you're going to up your chances of being able to birth your baby more easily and to just have a smoother birth. And then just to add to that, freedom, time and freedom of movement in labor itself. Like that's taken from some of us too. And that's a whole nother topic that we won't get into, but I just wanted to just, you know, chiropractic care and then given time and freedom of movement during the birth itself.
Excellent recipe.
Yes. I really appreciate you being here today, Dr. Berlin. This has been a great chat.
Thanks, Rachel. You have so much energy and passion for what you do. It's a blessing to the community.
Thank you. I appreciate that because you know what? Like everybody else, sometimes I feel a little bit like I'm not doing enough or like, you know how that goes.
Well, 1+1=3. The synergy when all of us puzzle pieces get together and work together. Maybe as an individual, I can't do that much on my own and you're limited in what you can do. But when we band together, we make the full picture. So
yeah,
this teamwork is really gratifying.
Awesome. Yeah. Teamwork makes the dream work. I tell that to my kids all the time. All right. Well, listeners out there, if you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out to me at contact@thenaturalbirthsite.com. And I will also put Dr. Berlin's information in the links in the description as well. So definitely check that out. And thanks for listening. We will talk to you guys in the next episode.
Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.